Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You're here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Golan Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, the boxing analyst for the Core Truth on Sports. I write boxing articles and more at dchgonsports.com. That is dchgonsports.com. And you can follow us on social media. You can look us up at Facebook, The Boxing Source. You can also search for The Boxing Source on Twitter or at Boxing Source 2 on Twitter. You can also look up The Boxing Source on Instagram, all one word, The Boxing Source. And you could also look for us posting on a case on Google Plus as well. But if you want to get in on the live show, you can call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. You know, pretty much got like a lot to cover. I'm going to do a 1 hour live session and, you know, maybe a little bit of overtime, but not necessarily sure if I'm going to go ahead and do that. This is kind of like a filled weekend, and I got a lot of things that are left to do here myself, but I'll continue to, you know, go in with the boxing talk as much as I can here for this particular episode. You know, pretty much going to get right into it. I had, you know, a big event over in Cardiff, Wales yesterday, as you have the Unified Heavyweight Championship field for grabs. You have the WBA super title, the IBF title, the IBO title, and the WBO title on the line yesterday, as you had Unified Heavyweight Champion at the time with the WBA super and the IBO and IBF belts, Anthony Joshua, undefeated there at 20-0, going up against Joseph Parker, who held the WBO belt. And have that, you know, pretty much had an undefeated record himself there. So, pretty much like getting into the, you know, background of the fight. This fight was, you know, kind of like was able to be arranged and, you know, was able to get done before the end of last year. So you're pretty much, you know, having that unification fight between Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker to be at Sun's Valley Stadium in March 31st. So they were able to negotiate the deal, get the percentages done and everything like that. And the purses, the overall purses for the fight were pretty, you know, hefty or so. I think that Joseph Parker basically ended up with just a bit under $9 million to be in this particular fight. So he got paid a pretty penny for this fight to take place. And, you know, Anthony Joshua basically, you know, of course, took the majority purse there. I would say it would be around, like, you know, about 12 or 15 million dollars there. But, you know, it was still like an overall large purse for both fighters. And, you know, they were both, you know, aspiring to see if they would be able to become, you know, unified champion with three of the four major belts there in the heavyweight division. You know, going into this fight, you had, you know, Anthony Joshua coming out. Basically, he had the height advantage and the reach advantage, and he pretty much showed that right off the bat. He was, you know, using his length and range to stay away from Joshua Parker. They were pretty much fighting at a distance. Parker, you know, pretty much was standing there square up. He was throwing the jab, pulling out the jab a little bit, but also throwing it with a little bit of conviction. However, there in the first round and the first two rounds, I would say, even though, Joshua Parker was throwing the jab, he was out of range of Anthony Joshua, so we didn't even really land on Anthony Joshua. And if he did, then it landed on Joshua's left arm, I would say. So you didn't really see that much success out of Joshua Parker in those first couple of rounds. Well, you know, Anthony Joshua kind of like pawed out, you know, a little bit of basic 1-2s. They was able to touch the body a little bit from Joshua Parker, and, you know, keep himself out of, you know, harm's way, so to speak, in those first couple of rounds. So, you know, even though it didn't look like on TV that there was that much action, it was basically because, you know, Anthony Joshua controlled the distance there from Joseph Parker, and I was able to, you know, nullify what Parker was doing there in those first couple of rounds. So I would say that Anthony Joshua had the advantage there in those first couple of rounds. Round three, he tried to, you know, open up a little bit, but, you know, the thing is that even though these two fighters were basically still at distance with each other, so you really didn't see that much action from Joseph Parker. He tried to increase his activity, his punch output. And then I would say around the fourth or fifth round, he was able to get to Joshua a little bit. He was able to hit him with a couple of right hands. But he had to basically work to get to the inside. And what he wasn't, you know, able to do was, you know, bob and weave and then try to get to the inside. But he was, like, bobbing and weaving, you know, while staying in the same position. So what that did is that basically, you know, had Anthony Joshua miss, you know, a few punches there while Joseph Parker was, you know, bobbing his head a little bit, but he didn't necessarily throw anything back to Anthony Joshua to kind of like even things up a little bit, or, you know, make the fight like seem like it would, you know, be a little bit at doubt. That didn't necessarily happen until about the fifth or sixth rounds, where you saw, you know, Joseph Parker tried to make a more concerted effort to get to Anthony Joshua, but Anthony Joshua was, you know, moving around the ring, kind of like backing up a little bit, keeping his left hand out and forward so that he would stay out of range from Joseph Parker there. But even with that, Parker was trying to, you know, increase the action, I would say, here in this particular fight, but didn't necessarily get that much action out of Parker through the halfway point of the fight. Sixth round, you would say that things kind of like picked up a little bit. However, while both guys were trying to, you know, fight on the inside and things like that, the referee that was over the belt, Giuseppe Quartarone, stepped in while both Joshua and Parker were on the ropes, you know, with Joshua's left side on the ropes and Parker's right side on the ropes, and he kind of like broke that up, and I would say he, yeah, weird, in a weird predicament, so to speak. While both guys were trying to, you know, increase the action and try to, you know, get a little bit more out of what they were trying to do, Giuseppe Quartarone just stepped in at a weird time there in the sixth round and kind of like broke things up. And, you know, that kind of threw a little wrench into, what was going on in this particular fight between these two, because, in the sixth round and the seventh round and, also in the eighth round, while, they were trying to fight on the inside and, Anthony Joshua was trying to incorporate that right uppercut that gives him a lot of success in multiple fights, and when he fights on the inside, he did try that a little bit. There were times that Parker was able to, raise his right or left hand to kind of like get away from the right uppercut of Anthony Joshua there. But, even with that, referee kind of like stepped in to break him up, even though there wasn't really that many clinches, so to speak, in this particular fight. But, eighth and ninth round, you saw more activity from Anthony Joshua. He was throwing the jab a little bit more, becoming more aggressive, trying to, unleash his right hand. But the right hand wasn't landing very well against Joseph Parker, because it looked like Parker was timing that right hand on a couple of times. He was ducking to avoid the right hand because, even though there were times when Joseph Parker was pumping the left jab, he was using that left jab from a very low position. So it was like his left hand was very low, almost to his waist, instead of like up closer to his face. And so, with that, I was looking at it and seeing that the right hand was available for Anthony Joshua to use there. But every time he tried to use that right hand, Joseph Parker was, either anticipating it or seeing it coming in and ducking the right hand. So it didn't really, get as much damage as Anthony Joshua wanted it to. 10th round, he tried to mix up his attack a little bit, and I would say, throw the uppercut a little bit more. Give the uppercut, in there as a counter, because he wasn't able to land well with the uppercut on the inside because it was getting blocked. So he was trying to throw it when Joseph Parker was not expecting it. Even with that, I would say that, Joshua picked up his pace in the 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds. Still was able to keep his distance away from Joseph Parker. Parker didn't really do much to try to get to the inside of Joshua, because it just looked like, Joshua had the advantage at a distance, and Joshua had the advantage, up close, because he didn't necessarily see, Joseph Parker on the inside try to work the body and then get out of the pocket. He was just there on the inside, threw a couple of punches, tried to look for the uppercut to come through, and then, either have the referee break it up, or they push away from themselves there. So that's how the fight kind of went through. And the scorecards basically had it where you had two scores of 118-110 and one score of 119-109, all for the winner, and still undefeated, Anthony Joshua. So he moves to 21-0, but doesn't register a knockout in this particular fight. So he's 21-0 with 20 knockouts there. So to me, I mean, I'd say that this was a fight that where you had both fighters fighting at range. Either one of them could have done a little bit more to try to get more action or try to, take risks out of there. But, Parker was reluctant to get into the inside because he wasn't, he didn't want to get hit with the right hand by Anthony Joshua, whether it was a right hook or a right uppercut. And Anthony Joshua seemed like he didn't go through all the way because he was getting hit with a counter jab by Joseph Parker. And the right hand that he was throwing while he was in position, was getting seen by Joseph Parker. And Parker scouted that and was able to block many of those right hands that were coming from Anthony Joshua. So it was a very tactical fight between those two. Showed, you know, how much boxing background that both fighters had there. Of course, you know, Anthony Joshua was an Olympic gold medalist, and Joseph Parker had a pretty good amateur career and, you know, started in the boxing gym at a very, very young age. So it was a lot of in-ring experience in this particular fight there. So you have Anthony Joshua getting the win 21-0 and, you know, registering the first loss in Joseph Parker's career. And, you know, it just seemed like, you know, after that, the talk was, you know, what was going on there with Anthony Joshua after this particular fight. So he had the post-fight interviews inside the ring, and you had the interviewer there, you know, asking the questions, you know, about him, how he was able to, you know, assess the fight there with Joseph Parker, and, you know, among other things. And Anthony Joshua basically didn't, you know, want to say that much about what he did inside that ring. He wanted to see if he could, you know, use the jab a little bit more in this particular fight, and to, you know, basically use that as a form of offense, but also as a form of defense, because he didn't really see Joseph Parker try to counter that and, you know, basically get to the inside. Even though Joseph Parker was throwing the jab himself, Parker was throwing that jab while he was out of range. So he wasn't landing with the jab that Parker was throwing there. So, you know, with Joshua, he's saying that, you know, that jab that he used was, you know, able to get him the win there and have him once again become unified heavyweight champion there. And that, you know, he tried to, you know, work himself in this particular fight. He wanted to see if he could get 12 rounds out of there, pace himself so that he'll be able to get through 12 rounds. And he was able to do it against, you know, a world champion in Joseph Parker that has defended his, that defended the WBO belt a few times before winning it in a vacant fight there against Andy Ruiz. So, you know, with Anthony Joshua now, it's all about what's next. And, you know, the talk has been, you know, all over, you know, when the potential undisputed heavyweight championship fight, you know, will take place. And, you know, one of the questions that was raised to Anthony Joshua was if he, you know, wanted to become the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. And he's like, you know, it's 100 that he's fully into becoming the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. And he answered by, you know, showing that he has the IBO, the WBO, the IBF, and the WBA heavyweight championships and 21 professional fights, and in that he really isn't, you know, been much about talk in reference to, you know, potential fights that could happen or fights that he may want to do. He's more about business. He's like, if you're serious about having a fight with me, then, you know, we could just go in, have the business talks, make a deal, and get it done. And over the course of the build up to this fight between Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker, is that he kind of said that, you know, we were able to, you know, work with David Higgins, Duco Events, and Joseph Parker to get this fight done and make it happen there, so it would take place in Cardiff, you know, on March 31st. And that, you know, thing is that, you know, he's really more about business, and he's kind of like showing that, you know, over the past few fights that he's had as a professional boxer, that he's, you know, went after the IBF championship He was able to get the IBO and WBA Super Championships in his win over Vladimir Klitschko. And then he was able to, you know, honor his mandatory against Carlos Takam. And then after that, here in March, or yesterday, that he was able to defeat Joseph Parker and add the WBO titles there. So, you know, he was able to become the unified heavyweight champion of the world there. Right now, I got area code 202 here with us. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, fella? How you doing?
What's going on?
Hey, too much. What do you think about that fight yesterday?
The fight yesterday, I would say, is I was summarizing you here past few minutes. I'd say it was like a fight that was done in distance. You had Joseph Parker that was trying to be aggressive and try to, you know, get at Anthony Joshua with the jab, but Anthony Joshua was using his height and using his reach to keep away from Joseph Parker. So, you know, in those first couple of rounds, while Parker was pumping the jab, he wasn't really landing on Anthony Joshua because Joshua was too far away from him there. So, you know, in those first couple of rounds, it was basically, you know, keep away from Joshua. He was throwing a couple of punches here and there, working the body, but, you know, as long as he stayed out of range from Joseph Parker, he wasn't really going to be affected much. You know, midway through the fight, you know, you try to see that things kind of try to pick up a little bit. But, you know, you had that referee come in while both of them were on the ropes, and also step in at, you know, kind of like weird times to see what was going on the inside between Parker and Joshua, even though there wasn't really that much of a clinching action going on in the inside. But, you know, overall, it was basically about Joseph Parker with his activity in the first half of the fight. It was there, but it wasn't doing much damage. And then in the second half of the fight, that, you know, activity kind of like wore down in the next couple of rounds. In the seventh and eighth round, it started to dwindle. And then by the ninth round, you saw Anthony Joshua pump the jab a little bit more there and, you know, get to Joseph Parker a little bit more in that. But, you know, overall, it was a tactical fight. You had the judges scored, two judges scored it 10 rounds to 2, and one judge scored it 11 rounds to 1. I had, like, Joshua up 8 rounds to 4 or so. But, you know, there wasn't, like, anything to where there were clear-cut rounds for, you know, Joseph
right.
Parker other than 2 rounds
swing,
that I could probably
yeah,
see.
It could have been swing rounds.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, with him, I would just say that, you know, Joshua got the points win. Not necessarily sure, you know, what his overall strategy was. He said he wanted to stick behind the jab. And, you know, he was able to do that at times. So it was just about him trying to find Joseph Parker there. He did try to throw the right hand on multiple occasions, but Joseph Parker with his head movement, he kind of like, you know, got away from that right hand in the first half of the fight. And then in the second half of the fight, when, you know, Joshua tried to incorporate the right uppercut, Parker was, you know, bringing in his, you know, either his left or his right hand to, like, kind of get away from the brunt
left
of those uppercuts. The only way, you know, the only way that Joshua was able to get a right uppercut in was when he was able to, like, get Parker to the ropes. And then when Parker threw his left hand, he came back with the right uppercut. And then he was able to land there. But, you know, other than that, I would just say that, you know, Parker didn't do much as he should in order to try to get Anthony Joshua and try to win those championships. If he, you know, was able to, you know, go a little bit more, then, you know, he may have had a little bit more success, but he also put himself in more risk.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I, as I looked at the fight and as I looked up, you know, listened to all the information that was put out by Parker and Joshua through the weeks, I really looked at it as Joshua said a few things that stood up with me. Early in the week, or the week before that, he said that he wanted to be more like Mike, more like Mayweather than Mike Tyson. And then later on in the week, he started saying that he's going to be more about finessing. And then I believe at the post conference, he was talking about how he wanted to be, you know, he wanted to make sure he have all his faculties and everything when he gets old. So what I'm gathering is that Joshua is going to try to be a more technical fighter than a banger. I didn't see Joshua really take any big risks yesterday. And I seen Parker pretty much trying not to get knocked out. I didn't feel, though, that he was trying to actually win. I seen him more just trying to make it to the 12th round. And, you know, here and there he tried to execute, you know, a few jabs and, you know, some of the harder punches. But, you know, a lot of people were saying it was a chess match, and it was. But I feel, though, neither one of them took the risk yesterday whatsoever. I mean, it was like stalemate to me, to be honest. You got to beat the champion for one. So it's Parker's job to do the more risk-taking.
Right.
And I didn't see that. I seen him trying not to get knocked out last night, you know what I mean? And that's why I said from the beginning that it was going to go to the distance, because I felt that that's what was going to happen. Plus, I look at the last few fights. I mean, when he fought Klitschko, he went 11 rounds. When he fought Takam, he went 10 rounds. I just feel, though, when he started to inch up into that elite level, we're going to see more distant fights with him. I'm definitely looking forward between him and Wilder. You know how you and I talk about that offline. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I will make it known on this vlog that I am going with Wilder. And I feel, though, that Wilder's going to knock him out as well. Actually, I think that's the only way that Wilder can win that fight is that he knocks Joshua out. I think that Joshua can outbox Wilder. I give him that. But the whole problem is Joshua has to go 12 rounds without getting hit by Joshua once. And I just don't see that happening. And we both know that Joshua chin is not the strongest little thing. Not to say that Wilder is, but he's been in 49 fights. Well, no, I'm sorry. 40 fights. And has not been dropped in all 40 fights. So to say that in the heavyweight division, because everybody has a punch, that says a lot. And, you know, I know people are going to say, but what about the Ortiz fight? Ortiz still had 30 seconds to knock him out, and he didn't. And then when he turned back around in the next round, in the eighth round, he still couldn't. So, it's, you know, that's just how I feel about it. But I feel, though, in Wilder versus Joshua, the first man lands win. I truly believe that. And I just feel, though, that Wilder's good. I just don't think that Josh is going to be able to recover like Wilder can due to all those muscles and all that stuff. But, you know, we'll see. But I'm going to be honest, that fight looked like a good sparring to me. That's what I seen yesterday. It wasn't an exciting fight at all.
Well, you have yeah, it was like a different type of fight between Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker, because you had somebody in Joseph Parker that was, you know, much shorter than Anthony Joshua and didn't have the reach. So with your point of what you're saying about Joseph Parker just doing enough not to get knocked out is kind of like the assessment of this particular fight by many. Because, you know, what I was saying was that, you know, Parker is throwing jabs and things like that, but he wasn't doing anything to get into the inside and, you know, kind of work, you know, Anthony Joshua and try him in reference to, you know, being in there for 12 rounds or 10 rounds or anything like that, which was the plan of Anthony Joshua in this particular fight, was, you know, like basically show if he will be able to pace himself, you know, through 12 rounds. I mean, yeah, he was able to, you know, go through 10 or so with Carlos Takam, and he went through 11 with Vladimir Klitschko. But the thing with Klitschko was is that, yeah, he went 11, but there were a couple of rounds in those 11 where he didn't really throw that much at all. So he was basically in a couple of rounds just catching himself up.
Resting.
And yeah, things like yeah. that. And then after he caught up himself and was able to catch his breath, then he was able to do more activity and then, you know, eventually knock out Vladimir Klitschko there. And, you know, with Carlos Takam, you know, he was basically fighting a shorter fighter. So if he was not, you know, if Takam wasn't able to really do much of anything, then, you know, Joshua could just pace himself any way he wanted to. There wasn't anything that Takam could really do. He was, like, moving his head a little bit to kind of, like, not be in the range of Anthony Joshua, but, you know, nothing coming back from Carlos Takam was going to do anything to, you know, really damage Joshua in that particular case there. So,
yeah,
you know, here against Joshua. Yeah, he was getting into the inside because he was, you know, bobbing and weaving and then going forward while bobbing and weaving. So he was able to get to the inside by doing that. So, but with Parker,
yeah, but he was in
Parker
there to,
was not
he
doing
was
that.
In there to do, yeah, he was in there to do what he was supposed to do, and that was to make Joshua look good. His style was perfect for Joshua. Takam was. His style was perfect for Joshua, where Joshua was able to put hands on him. Whereas it was totally different with Parker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could see the big difference.
Yeah,
you know?
He was. Yeah, because he was like, yeah. The thing with Takam, Takam was more in range in that particular fight. So you did see Joshua connect a little bit more with Takam, particularly in that fourth round when he was able to get that counter punch in and put Takam to the canvas a little bit. And then after that, it was just, you know, it was just like Joshua working Takam and basically battering him to a stoppage win there. So that's what I pretty much gathered on that. Now, real quick, I wanted to get area code 646 in, I think. We'll try to get him in here in a little bit, and then after that, 813. So 646, tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, James. You know what it says, man. Deontay Wilder.
Yeah,
Understand, man. Oh, that fight yesterday was obviously boring as hell. You know, it would have been nice if the referee would let Joseph Parker get on the inside. I hear you guys talking about Parker's going to get inside. Well, as soon as he tried to get inside, since he tried to fight inside, the referee would break them up. So, I don't know what was going on with that. You know, I heard that the official in the fight only had 4 championship fights under his belt. Terrible referee.
That's correct.
I think he ruined what could have been a pretty decent fight. Because the strategy that Parker had was obvious. Parker was going to move, and then he was going to try to get inside Joshua's jab, try to take it to Joshua's body, see if he could clip him every now and then with an overhand right. And that was going to be his strategy. But I feel like Parker wasn't allowed to implement his strategy because it seemed like as soon as he got close to AJ, that referee was just ready to break them up. One of the worst fights I've seen in a long time. The referee let AJ call his own timeout to get his tape fixed. I've never seen that before. A fighter just like, listen, I'm going to the corner to get my tape fixed. He let one of the rounds end with 7 seconds left. I'm like, what is going on here? But if after that performance, you especially, James, if you still think Anthony Joshua is going to beat Deontay Wilder, then I have no words for you, man. What I saw yesterday.
All right, then.
Was...
Oh, well, okay, then. Okay, then. Since you say that, then you have no words. Guess what? I'm going to put in 813 on real quick. Yo, 813, what's going on?
I can't believe this. There's no way. You think this guy is still going to beat Deontay Wilder? This guy is timid. The reason why
he changed his whole strategy,
he was afraid. He was afraid of Joseph Parker. He doesn't want to engage. He just wants to stay behind his jab, get that good strategy. But he's not going to be able to do that against Wilder. Wilder has one of the better jabs and most athletic jabs in the heavyweight division. He's not going to be able to fight Deontay Wilder the same way. And if you heard him in the post-fight interview, you know, this guy sounded very timid. He said, I want Wilder or Fury. What do you want to do? Do you want the fight or not? Do you want to be undisputed
right.
champion or
there
not?
There you go.
This man,
right.
in the words of Deontay Wilder, this man, he doesn't have the confidence. He don't have the confidence in himself.
I thought he was going to call me out for
that.
A minute.
Okay? He don't have the confidence. He knows that Deontay Wilder is going to knock him out. He was very, very energetic. He had a lot of that I want Wilder energy because he knew Wilder wasn't in the building. He knew Wilder was. Would he have had that same energy if Deontay Wilder was in the building? Of course not. That's why he told Sky Sports and that's why he told Eddie Hearn that Deontay
supposedly.
Wilder is not allowed in the ring. He knows. He's a scared man and he's a marked man. And Deontay Wilder is going to be the one to take him out. And that's all I got to say about that.
Oh, okay. All right. 813, what you got to say?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Trill and 606 Deputy George. Your take on that. But Trill from Tampa, you already knew it is. So if you guys think about this from the previous era of heavyweights, I'm talking about Tyson, Vogue, Holyfield, Ray Mercer, people like that. You guys know all those guys were killers, and they wanted it. And they talked the talk, and they walked the walk. Damn near all of them, right? So that's one thing about this era, where you'd be Wilder, Parker. I mean, look at Wilder and Parker. A good amount of trash talk between the two of them. And look what we got last night. It did not equate to the trash talk that they did back and forth amongst each other. And going forward with Wilder Parker or Wilder Joshua, now we know the story all too well. Wilder cannot box, no fundamentals, things like that. But the most thing I like about Wilder, aggression, rage, and that of course that devastating right hand to equalize. We know that. With Parker, natural size, Olympic stuff like that, pedigree, all that stuff. All right. But you like what you guys are saying right now. Joshua, he talking stuff. Wilder's not even in the building. Oh, now you want to talk, right? So what I'm getting at is like these guys are not killers. They talk a lot of bullshit, but they're not killers. And it's a crying shame because Joshua, once again, has the pedigree, has the size, has the backing, has all that. But he's not a killer. And keep in mind, he's only, what, 20, 21 fights in? So he's still relatively early in his career. Because think in comparison to someone like Tyson Holyfield, 20 fights in, Tyson was a killer already. 10 fights in, Tyson was a killer. Just fighting his competition at that point. And with Joshua, 20, 21 fights, he's not a killer. He hasn't learned that killer instinct yet. So it's going to be a very, very interesting lead up to when and if this fight happens. Because, like, for example, like I said, Joshua, he's a champion, got 3 belts, cool. But he's not a killer. You have to learn that. You have to acquire that somewhere along the way. And all the things that's happened to him in the ring has not let him be like that yet. So with that said, I was kind of 50-50 on this fight between the two of them, but I'm definitely leaning towards Wilder now. And that's simply because of the fact of the aggressiveness, the rage, all that stuff that Wilder can bring to a ring, despite his lack of fundamentals. And like I said, it may be that Josh may be scared of him. It may be the case. But we'll see.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the debate will be, you know, back and forth here over the next few months or so in reference to, you know, who would be the better fighter between Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. And like I've been saying before, and I still have that same confidence now that Anthony Joshua defeats Deontay Wilder. And I know, you know, we have Jay that's backing Deontay Wilder. That's fine. I know that we have 646 backing Deontay Wilder, and that's fine. But I go by
sound
what
like
I see.
Sound like 813 is, too. Sound like he's circled.
He,
there you go.
And you know what? That makes me even more confident.
It makes me even more confident. Because the more that y'all are saying that Deontay Wilder will win, it's the more that I'm confident that Anthony Joshua wins. And what I see in both fighters is that Joshua is able to make adjustments to who he fights better than Deontay Wilder does. Now, we all know that Deontay Wilder has that right hand. However, if he's not able to utilize what other tools he could have in order to use that right hand, then the right hand is useless. You're not going to be able to have an effective right hand.
What about his jab?
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. Those jabs work when you're fighting guys that are not your size.
I can go with that.
Hold on a second. What is he going to do when he's trying to get at somebody that's his own size? A key thing in Deontay Wilder's last fight that he had against Luis Ortiz at the Barclays Center, his strategy was to use his height at 6'7" in his reach to keep away from Luis Ortiz. You saw that in the first three rounds where you didn't really see Deontay Wilder throw his jab, or if he did, he kind of pulled his jab. He didn't throw it with any conviction. What he was doing was he was using his left hand as a measuring point to where Ortiz was. So Ortiz could try to get to him, but he couldn't because Deontay Wilder had his left hand out and he had a wide stance. So if he backs away, you know, he takes one step back or two steps back, he's pretty much out of range of Luis Ortiz anyway. So that's why those first three or four rounds in that fight between Wilder and Ortiz didn't have that much action. It was because Wilder was basically keeping his distance away from Ortiz. You didn't see anything really pick up until the fourth or fifth round. That's why you, like, heard boos from the crowd in the Barclays Center.
But
so,
you have to respect the fact that Ortiz is a highly technical fighter with all kind of experience behind him, amateur and pro.
And a lefty.
So he knows how to take that away from a fighter. Or Joshua ain't got that.
And he's a
not
lefty.
Yet.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know that for sure? When Joshua has the Olympic pedigree and the amateur background. Olympic gold medalist.
Come on now. They gave him
that's
that
my
medal.
Question. That is my question.
The medal.
The fight.
I'll say one thing in regards to that. So when you train for fighter, trying to get you ready, all this other stuff, running, cardio, all this stuff, right? But when you're in that ring, you're in there alone, and it's up to you to make those adjustments in ring. Now, does Josh have all those in ring adjustments as of yet? That's natural instinct. He's getting there.
No,
not yet. He doesn't possess all that. At this point, to me, Josh is still like a robot. He has to be told what to do. And that's going to be the difference between him and Wilder fight. Wilder's aggression that he's going to pump that jab, and the fact that next year, it may be a sense of Joshua may be scared a little bit. It may be that, but when you're in the ring, you know you're alone. It's up to you. Nobody can throw the punch for you. Nobody can think for you. When you're in the center of that ring, on the ropes, it's up to you. And Joshua does not have that as of yet.
And what about the mental pressure that Wilder's going to put on him? That mental pressure, man, means a lot. And now I seen when Wilder fought Gerald Washington, and that's someone that's his height. And he did have problems, granted. But one thing about Wilder, he going to get to you. And his power don't weaken. You know how most people, heavyweights, Their power started weakening as the rounds go. I don't see that with Wilder. Wilder still knock you out in 10, 11, and 12. You know, and I I'm going to tell you, Joshua embarrassment waiting to happen. I'm telling you that, bro. I'm telling you. They've been holding that boy back for a reason. They know what Wilder gonna do to that kid, man. The kid know what Wilder gonna do to him, man. And you gonna be a stack.
You
gonna be a stack lighter.
Nope. I want us to watch the fight together, matter of fact.
Yeah.
Absolute confidence. Well, I'll tell you this. If the fight's in the States, I don't know if we're going to watch the fight together, because I will, by hook or by crook, be in attendance at that fight if it's in the States.
Oh, well,
that's,
you know, I will too, my brother. Come on now.
Yeah.
I made the last six Mayweather fights, so this is nothing for me to make.
Yeah, exactly. So you know it ain't the thing for us to make it happen. Exactly.
Yeah, you know how I roll. So you know.
I'm looking forward to. Shoot, that would be a good little trip to go to the UK right there, man.
Yeah,
that,
I go
UK,
to UK.
I ain't
just
even
got
been
back
there yet.
China, so that ain't. I just got back from China.
Yeah.
The UK ain't nothing to me, bro.
Yeah.
Take them flights.
Ain't number little trip. You know. Like
that's
10,
it.
12-hour trip right there. You know what I mean?
Look,
so, yeah.
And the tickets are cheaper over there.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Yep.
They way cheaper.
Yep.
Way cheaper.
Yep. So that would be a good little trip, man. If they make that fight over in the UK by the end of the year or something like that, and I'm be like, yo,
I'll take that trip. I'll take that trip.
Definitely. Just for that whole experience right there. Because, I mean, you see how they kind of like do the whole little fireworks and all that type of long entrance type of thing there, whether it's in Wembley Stadium or in Principality Stadium or anything like that. So they try to, you know, make that a whole event, you know, plus more. So, you know, I'll see if that, you know, actually takes place. And then wherever it's at, I'm gonna make sure that I have that effort to go. Just has to depend on when they actually make that fight.
Just bring that.
If they make that fight, I hope that the fight doesn't, you know, necessarily take place somewhat time late in the fall, because that means that I'll miss a particular event that I go to almost every single year. And Terrell knows what I'm talking about, but I'll skip it anyway.
Hey, Jay, real quick. So obviously you're going with Joshua, right?
Who? Oh, you talking about James?
Yeah, James.
Oh, my name is Jay too, so I wasn't sure who you're talking to.
Mr. DMV, I'm talking to. You know who I'm talking to.
Okay.
So you're going with Joshua. I'm going with Wilder. So I'm making you a quick side bet. So basically, when you lose your bet, I want to see a video of you with some big pussy girl wind up on you. All right? You just got to send it to me. All right? Can you agree to that?
Wait, a big what?
A big pussy girl.
You mean a roly poly.
Well, like a 300-pounder.
All right.
There you go.
Yep. And you know what? It gotta be. Dang. You know what though? It gotta be like some random chick too. It can't be like nobody I know. That won't count. Yeah, it can't be nobody I know. That won't count.
And they gotta be Bertha.
or Big Shirley from Martin. Something like that, man. All right,
man.
I'll accept that bet. So we got a, you know, good little things going on with that particular fight. Shoot, I might have to have a notepad down to, you know, mark down everything that is on the line for that fight. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, I'm still confident on it. So I mean,
What's the vice versa? You got to do the same.
Oh, for TTP. Oh man. And I have to say, ooh, you're gonna have to like either like perform one of them
dance hall dances, Jamaican dances, or you're going to have to do, I'm going to have to figure out a move that you're going to have to pull off on a gal. I'm going to have the video. I'm going to show you the video, and you're going to have to pull that off. Either you're going to be, like, jumping off of the ladder or off an 18 wheeler jumping.
Oh shit! Well, you ain't got to worry about that, bro. A while ago, win, so you'll be good.
Oh man, and Jesus, my time is flying here. I had like about
now. I'm gonna tell you one thing though. I'm gonna tell you one thing. Now, remember when Lennox was fighting, right? And Lennox realized that he really didn't have a good chin. What he started doing is really started working behind his jab. And once Lennox got behind his jab, couldn't nobody touch him. Now, that's going to be Joshua's only way out right there. Because Joshua, we know Joshua doesn't have a chin. He done got knocked out, knocked down in pretty much every camp he done been in. So...
Real fast though. Jay, you did say something about Deontay Wilder in like your opening assessment, and that you said that Deontay Wilder had never been on the canvas.
No, he's been on the canvas, but not as a pro.
Yeah. Yes,
not
actually
as a
pro. Yeah.
In amateur, he has. I'm talking about as a pro.
Yeah, in amateurs. Yeah, as a pro, he has too.
Which fight?
Yeah, he's been down as a pro. It just hasn't, you know, happened
Which
in a
fight?
Long time, though. That's the thing.
Which fight?
Oh, the Harold Skonis fight. Harold Skonis. So it's, but it's been like a little while since, you know, he's, you know, had that fight. So he hadn't been, you know, on the canvas since then, you know, so.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that one up. Spell the name.
Harold Skonis. Like, if you go on, you can go on BoxRec and then go through Deontay Wilder's record.
Okay,
and
yeah,
go to Harold
Skonis. I'll
check
it out that way. You
know
what?
And then
I
you'll be able to
hear something about that. But you know what? I think a while back I heard about that, and you can't find no video of it.
No, you can't.
It's like
it's been
erased off the internet.
I don't even think, but my thing is, the way that it's looking, I don't even think it was even taken, because it's not like it was on, you know, any type of television. The main event itself was on television, but the undercard fights were not. So the only thing you could have from the undercard is pictures, and that's pretty much it. Because some of the other undercard fights are not even on, you know, you can't pretty much find them either. So it's not just that fight. It's most of the fights that are on that undercard that you can't really find.
Yeah, you know, so how many times? Well, that's still pretty good out of 40 fights, bro.
Yeah, that's something right there. So we'll see when this fight, you know, takes place, and then when that fight takes place, I'm gonna have my list, you know, just like Chris Jericho or whoever it is. I'm gonna have my list, and I'm gonna see all those people that are gonna be paying me for their bets. I can't wait.
Well,
real quick,
I'm working off a 97% prediction right now, bro.
Well, you're going to be looking at that 3% failure rate, because that's going to increase, buddy. Real quick before we get, like, off the live air, number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. Back to the thing at Principality Stadium. We did talk about the main event. The co-feature that was there was the heavyweight fight between Alexander Povetkin and David Price. This one was kind of like a semi-eliminator for the WBA championship. You have, of course, Alexander Povetkin with his sole loss to Vladimir Klitschko. Had his previous, you know, transgressions with meldonium and other substances, going up against David Price, who, you know, was, you know, tall guy there, 6'7", 6'8", came in there 22-4, you know, with a lot of those
all four of those fights ending in knockouts, you know, losing twice to Tony Thompson and Erkin Tepper and then Christian Hammer back in 2017. But here against Povetkin, he was just, you know, there at 6'8", you know, trying to throw the jab out a little bit, but Povetkin was, you know, real low, looking almost like he was doing a little strategy like Joe Frazier does, bobbing, weaving in, try to, you know, get in. But instead of using, you know, the left hand like Joe Frazier's done, it's the right hand that Povetkin used. And so in those, you know, first couple of rounds, you had Povetkin using that right hand and basically just using it to land on David Price, as David Price wasn't even using the jab, his left jab, to keep Povetkin off of him. And there was, you know, that one round that pretty much like sparked everybody in the crowd up. You did have, you know, Povetkin drop Price, but Price was able to get up from that. And then before the end of that round, Price was able to, you know, seriously hurt Alexander Povetkin, back him, you know, all the way back to the ropes, that Povetkin fell to the ropes. And that was counted as a knockdown. So it kind of like ended up being an even round. But that was pretty much all that Price could do at that point. He got, you know, hurt with a right hand that, you know, dropped his guard, and, you know, before the referee could really notice anything, Povetkin came with that left, bow, and knocked him out. So that was, you know, another knockout loss for David Price there, and he falls to 22-5, and Povetkin moves to 34-1. He wins a couple of minor heavyweight titles to kind of like put him in contention for the WBO and WBA heavyweight championships there. So just, you know, wanted to, you know, get that little thing there out of the way before the live session kind of ends. But, I mean, with me, with Povetkin, it's, you know, we all know about the background with Povetkin. He's, I mean, they do have a fair boxing program under the WBA. So, I mean, he's probably registered under that fair boxing program for the WBA, so he can't really, you know, have any, you know, suspensions added on to him if he tested positive, because he would have, you know, they probably would have had that positive test probably after the fight there. But before the fight, he was, you know, good to go here against David Price. But, you know, just wanted to get that out of the way. I mean, I just saw that Povetkin was highly favored against David Price. I didn't think that Price would, you know, be able to do that much against Povetkin. He was able to, you know, get that right hand in to hurt Povetkin at the end of that round. But other than that, he didn't do, you know, much at all there. So that was, you know, what I wanted to get, you know, out of the way there before we get into, you know, a little bit of overtime here, and I look forward to what's happening next week. Anybody have anything to say about Alexander Povetkin?
I think that Povetkin and what you call him should fight. Him and Ortiz should fight. It'd be the battle of the Peds, man. I really think that would be a great fight.
that would be a good fight there between those two. That would really like kind of measure both fighters, I would say. I mean, I know that, you know, Povetkin did have his, you know, fight against Vladimir Klitschko, and Ortiz, you know, had his fight against Deontay Wilder. But, you know, other than those losses, we don't know where both of those fighters are particularly at. And I think that a fight between those two would kind of like say, okay, you got the champions here. You got, you know, Anthony Joshua with Deontay Wilder. Now, who is below those two guys? Is it Ortiz? Is it Povetkin? Is it Parker still? Is it, you know, maybe somebody else? You know what I mean? So, I mean, those two guys would probably, you know, still be within the top five in multiple ranking organizations. So, you know, the winner of those two will probably be in the top four or the top three in the heavyweight division, if they're able to get that fight done pretty much like in the summer or before the end of the year. So that would be a very good matchup right there. You know,
yeah, just real quick.
You go ahead.
I thought that David Price would actually beat this victory out. Obviously, that didn't happen. And the main reason why I thought he would get the win, here you got Povetkin, known drug user, known cheat, things like that, from his high profile incident with Deontay Wilder. So now you got a guy. Now you have to fight clean, right? So what does that do to your psyche? Now you know you're exposed, you're embarrassed by the public, things like that. Fine, all that stuff. So now you got to still go forward, but he still has that same invincibility in the ring. Now you're stripping those things, and we kind of saw that with the knockdown that he suffered from David Price. With that said, that's why I thought David Price would actually get a win. That didn't happen. So it's interesting to see how I want to see Povetkin in this next fight. Like I said, even if it was a Povetkin Ortiz fight, that would be a very interesting fight for a lot of different reasons. And like you guys said, just to see who's going to be on that tier two of contender status for dead boy titles and stuff like that. But like I said, with Price real quick, his stock is definitely staying down, getting knocked out like that numerous times. So he needs to think about going to the announcer booth or something like that. It's not working out for him.
Mhm. Yeah, so I mean that's going to be, I would say, that would kind of like cover everything in reference to the live portion of the show. We're just like stepping into overtime here for this, and I just wanted to cover one particular fight card that's coming up on Saturday, April 7th. It's going to be actually a fairly good fight card that's going to be at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. The featured main event is the Unified Super Welterweight Championship fight between Aris Landy Lara and Jared Hurd, with the IBF, IBO, and WBA titles on the line. The co-feature is a rematch with Caleb Truax against James DeGale. So that IBF super middleweight title will be on the line. You also have at super welterweight, Julian J. Rock Williams in another fight here. He'll be facing Nathaniel Gallimore at 21-1. But, you know, I just like hit up Gallimore's record there at 21-1. I mean, 20 wins, one loss, and one draw. And the guys that he basically beat are, you know, to say the least. And then at super middleweight, you have Sergio Mora going up against Alfredo Angulo.
Wow.
That fight's not going to be on Showtime, but my goodness, if there is a way to find out how to watch that fight on TV.
Sometimes they put those undercards on the stream, Showtime is streaming.
On the stream, So maybe if Showbox has a stream, you'll be able to look for that particular fight, you know, and more, because that is going to be a definite scrap, I'm sure of it. And it'll basically say, you know, the winner stays alive as far as like his professional career, and the loser might as well just quit it. You know, so that's like four fights right there that, you know, either had like a lot on the line or have featured guys out there. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully there'll be a way that I can see it, but judging by where I'm going to be at that time, it's going to be very difficult for me to make that happen. But just want to get into the co-feature and the main event there. First with the co-feature, Caleb Truax against James DeGale. Of course, it's a rematch from the fight that was in Olympic Park in December, where Caleb Truax is able to outwork James DeGale in order to win that IBF super middleweight championship. And so we're going to have this fight here once again between these two for that super middleweight championship. And I think this one is going to be to see either if James DeGale has anything left, or if Caleb Truax can prove himself to be a real deal in that particular weight class. Because to me, that super middleweight division is still, you know, very, very talented, so to speak. So, I mean, I kind of see that, you know, Caleb Truax can make his name in the super middleweight division. Of course, we have, you know, like Zerto Ramirez there with the WBO belt, David Benavidez with WBC belt, and George Groves is going to have, you know, his final in that World Boxing Super Series. So it's still like a lot that has to be sorted out in the super middleweight division, but I think that Caleb Truax, you know, if he's able to win this rematch against James Aguil, then he has, you know, possible fights against Jose Oscaragui, a unification match against David Benavidez, maybe a, you know, a voluntary defense against Anthony Durrell after this. So there's still like a lot of possibilities out there for Caleb Truax if he's able to get the rematch over James Aguil here for that IBF Super Middleweight Championship. I'm going to start here with 646, if you have any analysis on the co-feature there.
Well, honestly, I think James Aguil is washed up. I think this is just one last gasp. I think he's going to get knocked out in this fight. I don't really think much of him at this point. I think Badu Jack, you know, did what he had to do, took a soul, didn't get the decision. I think Aguil got a gift draw, and I don't think Aguil's been the same ever since. Caleb Truax isn't much, but I don't think James Aguil is up for professional fighting anymore.
Yeah, so that's the thing that a lot of people have said in reference to that unification fight that happened. I think it was last January, where you had, you know, Badu Jack and James Aguil, and that Badu Jack really took a lot out of James Aguil, to where, you know, he didn't really fight pretty much that whole year until December against Caleb Truax. So that fight took a lot out of him, and you saw that he wasn't as active in that first fight against James Aguil, and he ended up losing that fight. And here he has this rematch against Caleb Truax, and we're not sure if he's going to be able to pull that off. I mean, real quick, so if this is like his last fight, so that means we might not be able to see much of his sister on ringside, you know, anymore. And I'm like, dang, dog. No, but. All right, Jay, you got something in reference to this particular match?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree that he done got his soul snatched out of him. I've been listening to him talk the last couple of days, man. He's still talking that talk like Truax not on his level, this, that, and the third. I'm going to be honest. I still think this is going to be a 50-50 fight. And I hate to say it, but I think Miguel, he ekes it out. But I think it's going to be an ugly fight.
You think it'll be like a sloppy little fight?
Yeah, I think it's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be real ugly, to be truthfully honest. But I think he ekes it out barely. You know, but I hate to even have to say that, but that's what I feel, man. I think it's going to be a 50-50 fight, but I think he ekes it out.
Gotcha. Hey, Terrell, you got anything on this particular fight?
Yeah, kind of pretty much echoing the same sentiments of the panel. I saw sort of the same comments by DeGale saying that Caleb Truax is not on his level. And I tell you what, aside from that, I hate when a fighter loses a fight and then post-fight he claims injury, he was injured in camp, something he did reveal prior to the fight.
I hate that.
It amounts to an excuse. All right, so we all know going to the previous fight, Miguel was the champion. He had the belt. He's in that position, right? And then all of a sudden, he gets shot by a relatively unknown contender, right, and loses his belt. And all of a sudden, I came back too soon from my surgery. I came back too soon from my injury. Well, if that was the case, then why didn't you pull out of the fight and claim injury before the fight, instead of going through with it? Like, I mean, and that's one thing we've seen here too. Crawford, now Thurman, who has history with that, people like that, where they claim he's injured, pull out of the fight, postpone it. Is that easy? It's not easy, but they do that. Don't wait till after fight, until after you lose your belt or your opportunity to claim, oh, I was hurt, I was my full self, I had a bad day in the office. I don't want to hear that. So not going to this fight, it's kind of difficult. And I kind of see it as a 50-50 fight too. And the reason why I see that is I see where I can see Truex getting jobbed on this one. Him doing enough to get the win, but not getting the win. And the decision,
right.
I can see that happening. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, name recognition, nobody knows him. Is there opportunity for him to make more money for not only for himself but for a network for promotional team? He can easily get screwed out of this one. So I would not be surprised if DeGale gets that title back. Would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't feel that James DeGale really has it, that he can fully, you know, be able to be as active as he is when he's in the middle of the ring and throws his combinations. It looks like he's more leaning towards leaning on the ropes, and when he leans on the ropes, that's when he basically gets himself tagged up. And I just see that's going to happen here in this particular fight. I don't think he really has enough in him or enough in the tank for him to, you know, be active in most of the rounds against Caleb Truax. And the way that Caleb Truax operates and, in his workmanlike style, I think that, you know, Truax will be able to, you know, work himself into, you know, either a decision win or, you know, maybe I have some type of stoppage where he's able to land enough to seriously hurt DeGale, and then it ends up being a stoppage win. So that's what I got in reference to that particular fight. But now we're moving to the main event there for the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, as you have the IBF, IBO, and WBA Super Welterweight Championships on the line, as Eric Landy Lau will be taking on Jared Herd. And, you know, we have, of course, Eric Landy Lau there, one of the, you know, guys that is a very skilled boxer, you know, long-standing WBA Super Welterweight Champion there, you know, ever since he had that split decision loss to Canelo Alvarez in 2014, you know, had a couple of fights here against Terrell Garcia, Yuri Foreman, and Vaines Matarosyan there. So we really haven't had a large-scale fight of sorts here over the past few years. And he's going up here against Jared Herd, who won the IBF Super Welterweight title last year with the knockout win over Tony Harrison. He did have that good fight against Austin Trout, where he was able to stop Austin Trout in 10 rounds. But, you know, he was getting unboxed by Austin Trout there for the, you know, first four or five rounds, which pretty much, you know, after round six, where Austin Trout basically was, you know, out of it. And in the interview that, you know, we had with Austin Trout on the show, he was saying that he was very dehydrated there in this particular fight. So he was just, you know, out of it. By the time the sixth round happened, that's why you didn't see him really punch that much there against Jared Herd. But here with in reference to this matchup itself, it's very important in that 154-pound division. They'll be, you know, one step closer to being, you know, the top guy at 154. I don't see the super welterweight division having an undisputed champion, because, I mean, you do have Lara as the champ right now going up against Herd. You do have Charlo there with the WBC belt, and you have Saddam Ali with the WBO belt, and he's going to be defending that belt here real soon. So they're trying to, you know, get that fight basically finalized there. But, you know, other than that, I mean, I would say that the winner here could be going up against Jermell Charlo in a unification match, but I kind of see that Herd has a better chance of having that unification match with Charlo than Lara does. You know, even though the whole thing with Lara and Charlo is not really existing anymore, I just still feel that they are not, you know, really inclined to fight each other. because I would have thought that fight would have happened already between Lara and Charlo, but it has not. So I'm kind of like semi-siding with Herd in that aspect. It's just that you got to see if Herd is going to be able to deal with the boxing skill of Arizlandi Lara, because he did have trouble with, you know, Austin Trout in those first four or five or six rounds. Now, what is he going to do against Lara, who, you know, most likely will be in shape, won't be, you know, dehydrated, can move in and out of the pocket pretty much at any time he wants to? What is her going to do in order to catch Arizlandi Lara before Lara gets out of the pocket? And that's, you know, my quick preview of that particular fight. I'm going to start with Terrell on this one. What do you think about this upcoming fight between Jared Herd and Arizlandi Lara?
Yeah, I tell you, it's a very interesting fight for quite a number of reasons. And I tell you, like, you guys know that how we have a fighter that's been on the scene for a while, but when you look at the summarization of their record, of their activity, and you're like, what has this guy been doing? And who part that could be number one on the list is Lara. I mean, this guy, he got skills. We know that. Cuban boxing style, we know that. Amateur, oh, he got it. But what has he done, right? I mean, he has a belt right now. We know that. But you can almost say he's kind of held that belt at hostage, in a sense. He hasn't really fought. He has his last big fight was Canelo. And I give it to him because we all thought that he won that fight. He didn't get that. We know that. But other than that, what has Lara done? Not a whole lot. And once again, you have a belt, and you have a name, you have recognition, things like that, that so many other fighters do not have, right? And you have access to networks, right, that will pay for your fight. But he hasn't done much. So in a sense, I mean, and what's funny, I like Lara. I actually do, because that pure boxing style. But like I said, he just hasn't done much. Just be more active than what he's been. And going to fight with Herd, we know that Herd's biggest attribute is his physical size. We know that. So me, I kind of want Herd to just secure victory, grab that belt, and Lara just to simply fade away because he hasn't done much. I mean, think about Lara, Darrell, even Peterson to a degree. Hasn't done much, you know. We want to see more than what we have when you think about their record and activity. So my lean is definitely towards Herd, and just hope that he grabs that belt, moves on, and creates more opportunities from that point.
Gotcha. Yeah, that kind of like goes into, you know, what I'm kind of like siding with Herd is that I kind of like see more that could be done if Herd was a unified champ than if Lara was, you know, still the unified champ, because Lara has had those opportunities, it seems like, over the past few years or so, where he could have had, you know, big fights against these other guys that were at 154 pounds. I mean, 154 in itself is a very deep division that has at least, you know, six or seven or eight or nine fighters that, you know, could be very good in that particular division. There, and I mean, that includes, you know, the guy that's, you know, on the undercard and Julian J. Rock Williams, who did, you know, fight for a 154 belt, but, you know, ended up losing by knockout to Jamal Charlo. So, I mean, here you got to be able to see what goes on with that. And also, you know, another person that's, you know, in the 154 pound division right now is Kell Brook there, that, you know, entered his name to 154 pounds. So that's another guy that could possibly be thrown into that whole mixture of 154-pound fighters that are out there. Matt, what's your assessment of Lara versus Jared Herd?
Unfortunately, I think Lara's going to make easy work of him. I'm rooting for Herd because, honestly, I'm sick of watching Lara. He's been stinking out his last few fights. That fight with Terrell Geisha, Goss, or whatever his name is, that was
terrible.
I'm sick of seeing him. I want Lara to lose this, but at the end of the day, skills pay the bills. And Lara got the skills. Herd is a little bit too hittable. You know, if Austin Trout wasn't so shot worn, I think Austin Trout would have got him out there because he was putting in work against Herd. And Lara has the power to knock Herd out, and Lara has the skills to hit Herd with punches that he just won't see coming, unfortunately.
Mm. Yeah, and that would be the key there for Arislande Lara, is that if he's able to get off punches that, you know, stun Jarrett Herd or stop the momentum of Jarrett Herd, then he'll have the advantage throughout the whole fight. Because, of course, he's going to be the faster fighter out there. He's going to be the one that can, you know, move in and out of, you know, certain situations out there. Jarrett Herd's, you know, strategy on paper would be to see if he could cut off the ring against Arislande Lara. And we don't necessarily know what Jarrett Herd's skills are in reference to cutting off the ring, so to speak. You saw, like you were talking about, or we were talking about with Austin Trout. Austin Trout was able to move in and out of the pocket in those first six rounds. And it really didn't seem like, you know, he really had many issues there. It was just that he just bent himself after six rounds, and he really couldn't move after that. And once he couldn't move, that's when Jarrett Herd was able to get to him and eventually had the fight stopped. But if Lara could do that from round one to round 12, he'll be able to have the big advantage. It's just that, like y'all are saying, you just don't want to see more of Lara out there when he's not fully engaging himself in getting fights that would kind of define him more as a fighter in the 154-pound division. Jay, you got anything on this?
Yeah, man, I got mixed emotions on this one big time. I agree a lot with the last speaker. But one thing I do have to say, when we talk about Lara and we say that he, you know, he has held the belt hostage, but one of the reasons why he's held the belt hostage is because he's high risk and low pay. Nobody wants to fight Lara because Lara normally outboxes everybody. So nobody takes the fight. I mean, we all been hearing Lara calling out everybody. He's even been calling Triple G out. Nobody will take the fight. Nobody will listen to him or want to do the fight because of him being high risk and low pay. Man, when it comes to him and Herd fighting, when I look at this as Tom and Jerry, man. Is Tom going to catch Jerry, you know? Because Lara is smart, man. He's truly smart. He's elusive. And he knows his way around that ring. Man, one thing about Herd, man, he has that mental pressure, and that's what really broke down Trout. Matter of fact, Trout is one of the ones that brought my percentage down to 97% right now. Because I had him winning that fight, being the more technical fighter, you know, and being, you know, a veteran of the game and being able to school the young cat. But the only thing about it, that boy Herd, man, he should be fighting 168 or something, man. I mean, the boy is huge. I've seen him beside 175 pounders, man, and he was drafting them. So I mean, he's a opposing figure when he gets into that ring. But as you all said, he was totally outboxed by Austin Trout. So it's going to be based on if Lara gets fatigued, you know, and I think that's what it's going to base it to, if that mental pressure wears Lara down. Now, Canelo couldn't do it, but shoot, how many years ago was that? Lara's he's no spring chicken at all. So I don't know what he got left in the tank, and he hasn't fought anything elite in a long time. And you know iron sharpens iron. So, I mean, he is still has Jamal that he can fight against. You know, I mean, spar against, you know, and that's always hard work, you know. But and one last thing, the Cuban curse. Seemed like no Cuban makes it, man. I'm sorry.
Over the past 7 months or so.
The Cuban curse has been bad, man.
But I'm going to have to go with Skills Pays the Bills as well. I'm going to have to go with Laura. He's going to have to break out one of his best fights ever to win this fight. Mm-hmm. This boy just comes forward, man, and he don't give up. But he's been outboxed a few times, and we all seen that. So we got the crafty vet against the bull, man. So I'm going to go with Laura. Hopefully he breaks the Cuban curse. That's where I'm at with that, man.
Yeah, and you brought up that point about Jared Hurd and his size, and my thing was when he had the fight card over at the MGM National Harbor headlined by Gary Russell Jr. against Oscar Escandon, and he was in attendance in that particular fight, and when I saw him, I thought he was, you know, pretty much a solid 180 pounds, I would say. Yeah, and when they had that Showtime, you know, the announcement of the cards that were going to be coming up in the year, and you saw Laura and Hurd next to each other.
Yeah.
You saw, like, you know, Hurd just looked like an absolute, you know, at the minimum a super middleweight compared to Arizlani Laura. So that's the thing that Laura is going to have to deal with in this particular fight. It's just that what weight will Hurd be at when he steps into the ring, and how would that affect his movement? Because to me, it would have to be him trying to, like I was saying before, cutting off the ring, or if he's going to actually wait for Laura to come to him and then try to counter what Laura has for him. Because we all know that Laura has a better boxing skill. But if, you know, Hurd tries to go after him and then just gets tagged with a little 1-2 or a jab, and then Laura steps away from the pocket or out of the way, then Hurd will have to be resetting himself over and over and over again. I would say that Hurd will probably have to set up a trap for Arizlani Laura at times, to where, you know, Laura will have to give up himself in order to score. And if he has to give up himself, then that may, you know, create some openings for Jared Hurd to really get to him. So that's what I'm looking for in this particular fight next week between those two for those super welterweight championships. And, you know, on that note, I'll pretty much put an end to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I thank all of y'all for calling in and giving your assessment on the fights that, you know, happened yesterday, and the card that's upcoming on April 7th over in Las Vegas. You can catch the sister shows on the Go Long Media channel. You have the Cohort Tucson Sports Tuesday nights, and the Take This L show, football talk show, on Wednesday nights. And should be pretty much like out of commission for a podcast next Sunday. But be on the lookout. There might be live shows through the Boxing Source on Facebook. So there might be a live show or two during the week on Facebook or something like a little bit after what happens on Saturday night. So be on the lookout for that. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is a hit, and I get hit. Now they're saying the trade. On that note, thanks for calling, y'all, and have a good evening.
Okay. Later.
Peace out.